Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jervis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Just fantastic. How about yourself?
Excellent. Doing all right. Summer is hit. Spring is gone. We are in the mid to upper 80s and humid. So just like anything, you know, it goes from one weather to another and boom, we're here. So, yeah, can't complain. Well, tonight
Jim, it's still May. Okay. In 72, when I landed in the United States, in Toledo, there was snow on the ground on May 22nd.
Okay. I understand. Not going to happen this year.
Right. Let's go.
Not going to happen this year. I was working outside yesterday, the day before, I can't remember, and it was like, I think the top of my head got burnt. It's amazing, but oh well. It is what it is. We'll deal with it. Welcome to our listeners. This is Straight Talk, episode number 76. And our show topic is going to be reopening with COVID-19. Now, we have, over the last several shows, had a variety of episodes that dealt with so many aspects of the COVID-19 pandemic and how it affects the dental office, how it affects your practice, what you may or may not be able to do, systems and procedures and protocols, and I mean, literally a plethora of information, items that maybe you should look at, that should maybe be integrated into your existing facility. Thought about if you're going to do a new design, just to figure out what to do since we were all dealing with this shutdown. Well, now the country is beginning to open. Your state may be one of them where you're already able to open. You may be already open. Some aren't, some are. We've been hearing a variety of different things from a lot of our contacts and the people that we talk with on a daily basis. The projects that we have that are currently ongoing, the newer projects that are being talked about, and as everyone plans and prepares. So I don't want to call this a wrap up, but I definitely want to call it a summary of everything that we've talked about and kind of put it in a perspective as to really, what do you really need to do to reopen those doors? And we've gotten some new information that just come out. One of the kind of, I think, extremely important pieces of information is a report from the CDC that says from a important scenario, they feel that the airborne version of this pathogen is much more contagious than a surface version. So you're less likely to transfer or catch COVID-19 from surface to surface contact, as opposed to airborne. And unfortunately, exactly what we're dealing with in the dental office, you know, the aerosol. So it's much easier to catch it with aerosol distribution, somebody coughing, somebody sneezing, all that stuff going into the air. And, you know, that's what this report is saying. And that, you know, that just came out, I think, last week. So it kind of sets at least a priority. Wouldn't you think, Han? You know, it sets a priority on where you need to focus your effort if you're going to open your doors or get ready to open your doors.
I don't think it let us off, in the task of keeping these surfaces clean, sterilized, and disinfected. You know, you still have to do that. But I think even before the report, I think we have came to the conclusion that the most vulnerable and the most highest priority of things to take care of are the indoor air quality. What's in the air. That's why we have the mask. Okay. The wiping down, sterilizing all the surfaces that you touch and things like that, it still plays an important role. It just is not as risky or not as contaminant as the air that you breathe. So I don't think we can sit back and relax and take our eyes off the target yet.
No, without a doubt. I mean, obviously both are serious, but if you're going to focus or concentrate on, at least your initial efforts, you need to focus and concentrate your initial efforts on your airborne. At least,
yes.
That's what we're being told. We're not experts on this stuff, but we sure are diligent about, getting into the weeds and finding all the particulars, sorting through the crap and the sales propaganda to get to the point of, what really is happening or what really will happen when you, have your doors open and your patients come in. The most important thing is every building, I don't care what it is, it could be a brand new building that not a single person, not a single patient has ever seen. It's not safe. It's not a situation that, because it smells great and it's got fresh paint on the walls and the floors are perfectly clean and no one's walked on them. That's only good for the day it is turned over to you. The minute you walk a patient through there, it's no longer sterile. Because no one knows. That's the one thing that is so unique about this particular situation. No one knows if you, in fact, have the virus and you're contagious. And to the day that they allow you to test every person who walks in your building and you don't let them in until they test negative, you have to assume, you have to work under the understanding that every person walking in your door is a carrier. So the minute someone walks into a brand new facility, there's the potential that your building is now contaminated. And I know, Han, you were saying before our show, we were talking about how, you've seen a bunch of plans or designs that have basically not even really addressed the COVID-19 contamination issue, and you're like, what happens here?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you still have a percentage of doctors, whether they understand, whether they care, or whether they just simply say, "We'll just do it and see what happens." I'm looking at new design that I put up for design critiques and stuff, and it's basically the same old. You got your waiting room, you got your reception area, and you got your bathroom, and you got your treatment room, and you got your standard shopping list of space, but there is no actual feature in the design that you can say they have they take a proactive measure in addressing the the isolation of the clinical area, I guess it's basically the design had was not getting to the depth of what do you do with the mechanical system. For instance, I've seen a pediatric office again with a with an open bay, and the question that I brought up was, what feature have you thought of pertaining to the COVID-19? How do you isolate and stuff? And they say, well, we can easily throw up walls onto, isolate or separate the, the chairs. The problem that I see right offhand is the spacing of the chair is far enough apart that allow you to put up a physical hard wall between the chair and still have the room to work, or are you going to be standing, with barely enough room between you and the wall to work? So those designs have to come in play. Now, Jim, we spoke a little bit about that. So if you throw up the wall, if they can throw up the wall, what may happen when they isolate, separate the open bay into private space or into individual treatment room? What other issue that they may face doing that?
Well, there's one important, and it actually goes right back to what we're talking about, the airborne portion of dealing with and containing this contaminant. When you have an open bay scenario, you may have only one or two HVAC distribution diffusers. So basically grills in the ceiling or grills in the floor, depending on where they come from. And if you throw up walls, you may be blocking off some of that distribution from one particular area to another area. So depending on how the system was designed, you may actually cause yourself a worse problem and have a operatory that you've placed walls around that has no air distribution in it. So that would be the worst possible scenario. Or even the next worst possible scenario would be you would have a system which has no exhaust or no return coming out of that space. So in essence, you created yourself this little sealed off operatory that once you are in there, the patient in there, you fire up your equipment. Next thing you know, you got aerosols sprayed all over the place. And again, you have to assume that that patient is a carrier. You've effectively contaminated the whole cubicle with no way to get air out of that space and or clean air into that space. So you create yourself basically a nightmare. And, it isn't just that simple that you can go in and say, well, just throw up some walls. It doesn't work. You got to look at it in an overall kind of approach.
Jim, I find the answer was rather cavalier, very nonchalant. First of all, for the listening audience, you by code, okay, you can't simply go in and throw up walls without having your, because most municipalities will require you to submit floor, the drawing to the city for permit for the change, or for the physical alteration of your office space. Okay, that's including installing doors, drawing up walls, changing, building system, like plumbing, mechanical, electrical. So it's not a simple, I'm just going to, over the weekend, I'm going to have, Bob the Carpenter throw up walls and we'll call it a day.
You're exactly right. And let alone bring into the whole aspect of this life safety and exiting requirements and everything else. I mean, you've seen it. I've seen it. I mean, it's scary. A lot of this response to this virus, meaning, you know, corridors are being blocked off. Exit doors are being closed because they don't want people to come in within that particular area. They have to only come in with a certain area. That's another aspect, correct?
Yes, that is. I mean, you have, even though, like, for instance, a shopping center like a Costco or a Sam, they're allowed to open at half capacity. Okay, that means that they only allowed to have 50% of the people that they usually have when things are normal. But that does not change the fire code requirement. That does not mean that they can bolt and lock the exit door. That do not mean that they actually can put a physical barrier to the exit doors. That does not mean that they can physically put up barrier to change the traffic pattern within their building, block off things. So there's a lot more at play or at risk than simply, I'm just going to throw up a wall.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you're right when you said it was kind of cavalier. I don't know if the best word would be cavalier, but I think it's definitely naive. You know, you're not really getting the right advice from the right people who understand what's going on and when you make that kind of determination or that kind of decision. And again, you know, this is straight talk, so Han and I usually say what we want to say, and we're sorry if we hurt your feelings. But, you know, it's not done to be callous. We're just pretty much telling you what you need to hear as opposed to what you want to hear.
Yeah, I think you know, if the response was, we have already, that's part of the design, we already take that into consideration, the chair is placed wide enough, far enough apart that allow us to, you know, to put up the wall when the time comes, if we have to, and the mechanical system and all that stuff was designed so that it would address, you know, so it would service each chair like it's in its own, you know, individual treatment room. Then that is, you know, then they have already put the thought into the design. But to simply say, oh yeah, you brought that up, we just throw up walls and that would be okay. And I find, and you're right, maybe cavalier is a little bit harsh, but I find that the response and the attitude would be very surprising when they're required to address those shortcomings in the design and they can't. Because they never planned it. It was not part of the design. Yep.
We spent the whole show last week with our engineering expert in dealing with the HVAC and Nate with Thorson Baker just had a wealth of information, a wealth of knowledge, and you really need to have someone like that on your decision-making team before you go and just, you know, do something like that. Now, here's another aspect, Han, and I'm sure there's a lot of folks that are out there listening that are either thinking, well, holy crap, you know, we're dealing with this reopening aspect of it, but, you know, I wanted to remodel, or I had to remodel. You know, my patient load was so that, you know, I have to remodel, or, you know, I know we've been talking with, and we talk with a lot of doctors, and, you know, they're looking at planning for a new facility. That doesn't need to stop, but it needs to change a little bit.
Yeah, it's some of them do not have the, you know, they're in a building that they do not have the option to remodel. Physically could not. Okay. You can make a few changes, but I think putting a lot of money in to get little in return a little improvement doesn't make sense. So we you know, currently are talking to several doctors that are going, I'm in that shoe. By the time that I put money in to somewhat modernize it or to address some of the issue, I don't get any more out of it than in production-wise than what I currently have. So let's look at something else. Then perhaps, you know, you have to look at the big picture. Does it worth? Is it a good financial decision to remodel, to modify, to update, to upgrade what you have, and not get exactly what you need versus relocating or building new?
Yeah, you can, but you can.
Yeah.
But you can do some things. But you're right; it has to be evaluated, and that's the important part. You have to have someone, you know, for example, like ourselves. Sure, we're kind of self-serving when we're talking about this, but it's important. You have to have someone who understands all the particulars, and you know, we're not trying to sell you widgets. We're not trying to sell you pieces of equipment. We're not trying to sell you systems. We don't, you know, they're just tools for us. We're trying to sell you the correct design and the thinking behind it and what's best for you. So, you know, what's best for you in your situation? And if it is a scenario where you're in an existing space, you've got an existing lease, you've been in there, you really have no other, you know, there's some things that can be done. Don't get us wrong. There are some things that can be done. Some of them are going to be inexpensive or, you know, not ultra expensive. Some of them are going to be very expensive, and you may say, no, it's not worth that kind of investment. I'll deal with another area. But and we've seen it. You see a lot of it. You got everything from sneeze guards to, you know, protocols and cleaning and obviously PPE, all that kind of stuff. You know, we understand that. And, you know, maybe you can configure your scenario where you can keep your traffic going one way in, one way out, and changing your protocol for how you bring a patient in, take a patient out, check them out, and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there are some things. Airborne-wise, again, probably the highest priority. You definitely need to look at the UV light, and especially the one potentially placed inside the equipment, inside the ductwork. It's as Nate was telling us last week, you know, it's not that of an expensive retrofit. Even if it is not your equipment, you can put it in, talk to your landlord, maybe they'll go half with you, or they'll work something out, because in essence, you're improving their space so that if and when you ever do move out, they can then, you know, market that as a facility that has this equipment in place, which will be more desirable to any future tenant. So it's not like it's a bad thing for somebody else. Honestly, we're seeing it all over the place, not just in the dental world, and in all the other public facilities where they're starting to integrate UV light in the air cleaning portion of their systems. I mean, we've got pizza shop down the road. We're talking about restaurants. We're talking about everybody. Honestly, if you're going to buy stock, I guess that's a long stock tip. I'd buy stock in UV lamps, wouldn't you, Hunt?
That's exactly. I mean, listen, you don't have to. Those commercial businesses, they don't generate aerosol like a dentist's office, but they have people. Okay? They have people, and those people are great carrier to transmit it and to transport the viruses from one place to the next. It makes a lot of sense to invest into. It's almost a no-brainer technology. You put it in and just check on it occasionally, and it would do its thing. It's well worth money. worth the investment.
And that, you know, that's what we're hearing from a lot of the people that we're, that we work with, that we're working with and have discussions with, when I say for other, you know, our other projects that we're working on, and they're doing that. They're, you know, and even, you know, Dr. going in the ductwork, his existing building. There's UV lights going inside the existing ductwork. I mean, that all is going to happen and is in process of happening. Makes kind of a logical sense. Now, it's not the one bullet, because that one bullet doesn't exist, but it sure is a great starting point to help deal with that airborne pathogen. And it works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. As long as you keep your fan running on your furnace or your air conditioning system, it's working. So, you know, like Hans said, you're right. It's kind of a no-brainer. Honestly, I've done it, so I guess I could preach to everybody about it, but put it in your house.
I haven't done that, to be honest. I don't have any. It's a new home. We don't have pets, so I can buy a little time, I guess. But I think if you have a facility where you have a lot of people, you know, milling in and out, and that could potentially be infected. Or potentially be a carrier. That's just a good thing to install.
Yep, good insurance. Insurance.
Yeah,
good insurance.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Bill's done it, and others are doing it. We've got a new facility that's about ready to open over in Illinois, and you know, he's putting in the sneeze guards. He's putting in the partitions. He's putting in the isolation. In most of the areas. I mean, so it's, you know, you're doing the things that you need to do. Flooring that's able to be sterilized. So, you know, things like go ahead.
Let me interject something in here for those who's putting sneeze guards, okay? Yes, you put in the sneeze guard because everybody else is putting in and they recommend that. But there is a factor that I've seen that's basically ignored. It's called safety. I've seen sneeze guard hang from ceiling with little chains. So it's basically a swinging, I don't want to use the word guillotine. You're looking at a rectangular piece of plexiglass. If you accidentally bump on one side, it starts to swing. And that corner could be pretty sharp. So if you want to put in sneeze guards, secure it. If you're going to hang from the ceiling, secure it. Don't let it just be a pendulum swinging. All right? That's just my safety thing. It could be a bad day if a patient or a visitor to your facility got ripped up because your sneeze guard become a sharp object that gouged them up. Jim?
Without a doubt. And that again is important. You know, talk with the professionals who understand all aspects of what you're doing, because that's important to what we obviously would think about those safety issues just as much as the issue of, okay, you need to put a sneeze guard in to be able to protect one person from another just because you can't keep them 6 feet apart, even if the 6 feet maybe not be the right dimension, because if somebody sneezes, you know, you can basically sneeze across the room. 6 feet's not far enough away. So, you know, the other aspect that we were just talking about too is if you're thinking about building a new facility, or when you want to get out of where you're at because, like, you know, Hong, you were saying that maybe you're in a situation that can't make any adjustments and you want to do something. So you're saying, I'm out of here. I want to get into a new facility. I want to get a new space. I want to move into a new location. You basically need the right team to be able to do that with. And again, people will say, well, that's self-serving. Well, not really, in the sense that we want you to succeed. We want you to do it right. And how best to. And I guess I'm just flabbergasted, hon, when you were telling me that some of the new plans that were coming through and being thrown out on Dentaltown had actually no thought whatsoever when it came to the whole aspect of dealing with this virus. I just can't understand that, because right now is the time. If you're going to deal with it, that's the easiest time to deal with it.
Well, you know, the thing, Jim, is that they, you're going to have a percentage of people that's going to say, I'll just deal with it when they tell me to change it, you know, or when I'm forced to. It's a brand new space. It's going to be designed. If the people, and no, don't get us wrong. Yes, we design for a living. We will be happy to talk to you about yours. We'll be happier if you say, I'd like you to be part of the team. But we started this program to share information so that the listener can be more informed when they make decision whether they use our service or not. Okay, so it's more of a public announcement service.
Yeah.
So when you
it's free.
So when you are planning a new facility, whoever is designing for you, they either have what it takes to, and the foresight and the experience and the talent. If they don't have it, they don't have it. You're going to be the beneficiary of that. Okay, so if you need to find somebody else to help you to get over that threshold of getting things right, find them. It don't have to be us. We like it to be us. But why spend the money to get things that doesn't work? Okay? When the worst thing to have is to say, I have a beautiful office with flaw by design. That sounds silly, doesn't it? But that's what you're saying is, I am settling for flaws in the design by design. So here we are, the world had come to a stop. We literally almost got sand, pushed into the hole. And we're forced to rethink of the things that we do, the way we live, the way we interact, and all that stuff, and somebody's going to build a brand new facility without even thinking about, maybe we should talk about putting doors in. If not, maybe we should talk about having the potential ability to put doors in. You don't simply ignore it and wait until somebody comes and put in a mandate and say, you got to put in doors into your treatment room. And you don't have the stinking wall space to do it. It doesn't make sense. Okay, Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's not just doors. That's just one area. I mean, and there are a ton of areas within the dental office that have the potential to passively help and assist you in containing this virus or any pathogen that may come down the road after we get over the COVID-19 virus, because there's going to be something else, and there's going to be something else after that, and it's going to happen. So, life as we know it has changed. Unfortunately, it's not going to go back to the old way that it used to be. It has changed, and it's never going back. And a lot of it, could be perception. Sure, it could be perception, but the perception is 90% of the rule when you think about it. Because if a patient comes into your doors and their perception is a positive one, they feel comfortable, they feel that it's clean, they feel that they're going to get great service, they feel that they're safe in your facility. Okay, that's the biggest thing. Then, you know, you give them good service, you're going to keep that patient, they're going to keep coming back. Because no dental practice, you know it, no dental practice can survive on just having single new patients over and over and over again. You need to have return patients over and over again to really, really, really survive. Huh?
Yeah, and really to look at, you know, addressing, you know, updating your equipment and improve the indoor air quality and all that stuff. I don't think it's a debate about whether you have to, or you know, or you're forced to. I think that's just been neglected for decades. And think about who, you know, yes, your patient comes in. If they're really on the game, they come in twice a year to get it clean. You know, get their teeth clean. And they might come in, you know, to also have other work done. But you come into the office 3, 4, 5 days a week. Your staff do the same all day long. You live there, kind of. So if you update the mechanical system, you put in the UV light, you put in better filtration system and stuff like that, the beneficiary of that new improvement, the cleaner areas, you and your staff, it will improve your health. It will protect you. So is it worth it? I hope your answer is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Well, and we all know that staff is a very important part of a dental office. And the business of making money in the dental office is about staff and having the right staff. And we've heard it many times. It's hard to find really good staff. And so once you have them, you sure want to keep them, and you sure as heck don't want them to get sick. And, like Johan, you're exactly right. This is as much for your patients as it is for you and your staff, because you're going to be exposed to all of this just as much as your patient A and patient B. Heaven forbid that patient A gives it to patient B plus all your staff, because, you know, that'd be the worst scenario. And we all know word gets around. Yeah, if something like that were to happen, I'm sure that would be devastating to your business as a dental practice. You know, that's a big risk to take. So if you're looking at doing a new facility, please, please, please get the right team who understands how to deal with this and work through the particulars. And not just from somebody that says, oh, yeah, I can do that. Or, yeah, I can integrate that. Make them prove it to you. Make them show you that they understand the particulars. I guess, Han, you said it right in the sense of, you know, it doesn't make sense just to go with someone that is going to, you know, design you something or create something based upon maybe a limited knowledge base, when you can have, you know, an individual or a group with an extensive knowledge base, because especially in a new facility, be it a new interior renovation of an existing building or a brand new facility, that's when you have the best opportunity to do it right for the least amount of money. Because afterwards, it's extremely expensive to do anything as it compared to this brand new build.
Let me throw a couple of pennies at what Jim just saying there. Okay. If somebody can turn on a computer or sharpen a pencil and draw a line, they don't make them designers. okay, similar to a guy who owns a pickup truck and a tool belt. They don't make him an automatic carpenter or a good one. The way you gauge, the way I gauge anyway, when I look at a set of a floor plan that's designed and set up and put up for critique is, do they know the basic stuff? Do they know enough of the basic stuff to qualify to actually do a layout where you're going to spend $500,000 or more into your office space? You know, the very fundamental thing is this. I say, for instance, for a bathroom, a public bathroom, you can't get away with having a non-ADA public bathroom anywhere in the United States. Okay, if your designer say that you can, run away and not qualified to do the design for you. Right? They're just telltale sign that tells you, and if you don't know and others that do know, bring it to you, or bring it to that to your attention. It's time to take to go to plan B. Find somebody else that can. That's that simple. Again, we'd love to have your business, but we don't have to be the one. But the information will help you to get the right stuff, you know, giving you the right result. And so that way you don't say, my beautiful office had flaws by design, because it wouldn't happen. Yep.
Yeah, without a doubt. And actually, to our listeners, Han just gave you one of the best questions that you can ask any potential architect or designer that you're going to have on your team. Ask it in such a way and see what answer they give you. And if they give you the right answer, then okay, you continue the discussion. They give you the wrong answer, next. And again, you know, that's cavalier of me to say it that way, but it's the reality. There are really good architects, really good designers, right, hon? And they're really bad ones. And there's nothing worse than a really bad one.
Yes. And yes, they may be cheap, but you will pay for that cheapness for the rest of your lease. Okay?
Or own of that building, yeah.
That is correct. Okay, so enough beating on them, Jim.
Yeah, I know. That's I know. But I will give you this one last thought. There is nothing worse than going into your facility day after day after day after day when there's this one area or this one issue that could have been and should have been, but never was. And that will gnaw at you forever. I guess we just forewarn. We want the best for you. We want the best for you and your team, and that's why we say these things, to help you to that point. Well, Han, what other things have we heard from our other doctors that we've talked with that, you know, that they've been doing or they're going to do? Again, we got, you know, the big project over in Illinois that's about ready to open, and others.
I think this the discussion about extraoral evacuation of aerosol.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion about having the actual machine to do that versus their handpiece. The HVE, which is basically a handheld suction that evacuate the aerosol at the tooth that you work on it, versus waiting for the aerosol to expel out of the oral cavity and be sucked up by a machine outside. You know that you invest how many thousands to have it. So that's still right now it's an ongoing debate whether it's the using of that already existing technology versus putting in a few more $1,000 to have another machine sitting in the room. Interesting debate. Here's the things that every time that you look at a mobile unit of any kind or a piece of equipment introduced into your existing workspace, is that how much more noise? Because everything that has a motor creates noise. It also creates heat. So additional heat, additional noise, besides the fact that it take up floor space. So you have to look at everything on a systematic, a whole, you know, the whole solution approach, and not just simply what's, you know, the a la carte approach. Right? So that is an item that I'm keeping my eyes on, Jim, because I thought it's an intrigue that they have existing equipment that already are, you know, within their office space, but it's not being talked about or talked much about. That's why it brought up the opportunity for somebody else to put in a nice little vacuum system called the Extraoral. The big thing, I think, is we have not too many of us that actually talk about it, is that if you have a filtration system, somewhere in there, somebody got to go and remove that filter. That filter, if it captures the pathogen, okay, is the pathogen still active on that filter when it's being removed? Because when you disturb it, you kick it, it will kick it up. Some of it will be put back into the air. So what is the best way to, you know, to deal with it? I don't have any answer. Okay, I just find it's an interesting conversation, and it's a very valid point and concern.
Well, Nate talked a little bit about that last week when he talked about that you have to have a certified technician who's designed, has the training and the protocols necessary to be able to replace and change out these filters, the HEPA filters and the high-end specific filtration systems, because they are, you know, they're full of all of this pathogen, these bacteria, the viruses, the mold, the mildews, all this stuff. And you're right, you don't want to then reintroduce them back into the space. I mean, that'd be like defeating the purpose. Here I go, I catch all this stuff, and then I open up the box and I shake it all out again, and next thing you know, it's all over the place. Why they do it?
True. And yes, Nate did address that, but that was specific to the HVAC equipment.
Right. But it also works with what you're talking about on your filtration systems, be it their mobile or their package units. It's the same thing. You know, you've got all that stuff
right,
in there.
Right.
You've got to be able to deal with it. Somebody has to clean it. You know, who's the low person on the totem pole, if you want to use that vernacular?
That's right. That's what I'm talking
about.
Who's going
to get thrown into the lion's den? Get it.
That's right. Okay, I'll buy you some beer and pizza. Go get that done. We talk about the technology to, to filter the air. Okay, but at the end of that, now that cycle is the maintenance, and that have not been really thoroughly discuss it to any depth. Now, they talk about it, but, you know, we haven't, because, you know, for most building owner, they go, what's the big deal? I'll just go yank it out, throw it in the trash, and put another one in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's not proper protocol, and you're actually probably putting that person at great risk, and you're also harming the whole system. Well, you know, here on that vein, Han, and there's another area that you talked about, which I think is extremely important to touch on in the few minutes we have left, and it has to do with the materials within the spaces. And we're talking about, you know, maybe remodels or new designs or even retrofits. But, for example, acoustical lay-in ceiling versus drywall. Well, we got a big issue there, don't we?
We do, and here's the pros and cons, okay? First of all, put aesthetic aside, because I know that aesthetic is something that we all pursue. For architect and designer, that is the things that we live for, okay? But after the photo shoot, it got to work. It got to not introduce any problem into the system for the owner. The whole purpose of the main reason why acoustical ceiling tile is up in the ceiling, okay, because it's too easy to damage when it's on the wall. It's a material that absorbs noise. Okay? Well, because it's porous. So when the aerosol that could throw up in the air, it gets sucked up into the return duct, it gets blown around by the and carried around by the air current, it's going to get thick on your ceiling tile. So what do you do? The benefit of having it is that because it comes in a lot of different nice texture, it looks kind of cool. Could be. It suck up the sound, all right? Other than that, what else is there? So we have drywall, okay, a hard surface. If you do it really nice, a nice clean finish, they look beautiful. And then we also talk about, okay, how do I access this space to change things, you know, to modify light, to rewire and all that stuff. So there's a lot of things to take into consideration what's right or wrong. Okay, it's a tough balancing act. There is another system, okay, besides a drop ceiling, besides a hard, you know, a hard drywall ceiling, there is a system called stretch membrane. It's basically a membrane that stretches from wall to wall. And when you want to get access to the ceiling, you take it down. When you're done, you put it back up. Yes, it does have acoustic ability and stuff like that too. But anyway, that's enough food for thought. Another material would be your wall, your floor. Jim, let me kind of bring this topic up to a different level of discussion. You and I talk a little bit about it. Everything that's installed in your building, whether it's equipment, whether it's finishes, they all have certain criteria that you have to adhere by. Sure, you want to buy because it looks good. You want it to maintain, easily maintain. You want it to, last a long time, and all of that. You want it to give you the value that you spent the money on. Okay? There's a number of things that can go wrong easily if you have the wrong people handling it. And that's usually in the installation and specification phase. If a product is meant to, for instance, let's say plastic laminate, most of us know what it is. Some of you might call it formica, but it's a plastic laminate. It comes in numerous of different grades, but it break up into two categories, vertical and horizontal. So if you use it, if you look at the pattern, you go, your interior designer, look at the pattern and say, I love that, don't you? Let's get that. And they don't read the fine print, and they put it on, and it was meant to be applied on a vertical surface, and they put it on a horizontal surface, guess what? You're going to be replacing that countertop all the time because it's not made for a horizontal surface. Okay, so it's a wrong, it's a material meant for one application installed in a wrong application. The static is great, but everything else gonna suck. So installation is an important thing. You have to follow. There is a document, it's almost a Bible for installer. What is it called?
Yeah, it's called the installation manual.
Bingo. Okay. That tells you everything that you need. No, it usually don't tell you. It tells your installer everything that they need to know to make sure that they use the right, let's say, flooring. okay, a manufacturer has a certain adhesive that you should use to glue down their flooring. If you use somebody else, a cheaper or a adhesive or glue for most of us, glue of one is not the same as glue of another. So it has to be the right material for the right installation of the product. If not, you will void the warranty. It's that simple. If you don't use the recommended adhesive or approved equal, you will void the warranty. The warranty of your flooring could be 15, 10, 15, 20 years. If you use the wrong kind of glue, it's only as good as the day you install it.
So you're on your own, baby. Your own.
It's very important that your installer, even the one that say, I've been doing this for 30 years, if he doesn't know how to read the installation manual, you're going to own that thing and it's yours. There's no warranty. Okay, why do I say this? Because it happened all the time. Okay, installers say, I'm an installer. I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what the heck I'm doing. I'm worried. Okay. Also, if you have design professional that tell you something like this, if you have a flooring that is meant to, floating floors. Okay. Floating floor, I've seen it. Supposedly are okay to be installed in light commercial space. Well, what exactly is light commercial? Is that one person come to your office, or is it 10 person or 100 person? Who knows? Light commercial could be anything. A floating floor has no business being in your dental office, period. All right, especially with those that have snapped together edges, because every time you walk it over it, it bent and it snapped back. It bent and snapped back. After a certain number of cycle, it will bend, snap back, and break. It's not a good system for you. So if you have a designer that say, I've been using this all over in a lot of dentist office, I never had problem. Well, just as long as it's not your office, okay, that problem should not be yours. If they recommend the material to be destroyed in a manner that will void your warranty, it's a problem. For instance, a recommendation such as cut off all the snap-on edges and glue it down when it's a floating system, it's a problem. So why do I bring this up? Because it happens, okay? You have to have the right people with the right experience, with the right knowledge on your job. Otherwise, you're going to be holding, you're going to be buying products that have absolutely no warranty, installed wrong, and you're going to be the beneficiary of the problem soon to come.
Yeah, without a doubt. Let me throw one thing in, and it has to do with the acoustics. And we're talking about sound control in that discussion that you were having regarding the acoustical lay-in ceiling versus drywall and other systems. There are other systems that are actually they've been around a long time. There's high-tech stuff and then there's low-tech stuff. And the one system that is actually a very low-tech system is called isolation clips. Where the basic design is that you don't want to have noise from operatory A get into operatory B, or operatory A get into the corridor, or and so on. So you want to keep that noise within your particular operatory, isolated within an operatory. Well, how do you do that? Obviously, a lay-in acoustical tile is one system. that will suck up the sound and it doesn't spill over into the other rooms. You can also fill the walls with bad insulation, acoustical bad insulation. You can put acoustical bad insulation up in the ceilings. You can even, for that matter, if you're in a crawl space or a basement, put it in the floor. You can encapsulate your whole room in this. You can also encapsulate the room with isolation clips where the drywall is not screwed directly to the studs. It's actually suspended from the stud with a special isolation clip that allows the drywall to soak up the sound wave, and it doesn't transfer it through the wall to come out to the other side and go into the other. They're very simple. It's a very low-tech but extremely effective way to deal with sound isolation. And again, that's a prime example of what we were just talking about. A good design done, you know, early. Now, it's obviously a lot harder if you're doing a renovation to go in and install that throughout. But if you've got a brand new office space where you're going in and renovating the inside of an existing building, or if you're doing a new build totally, you know, something to think about, something to look at. And it's exceptionally helpful to keep the sound going from point A to point B through those walls.
Good point, Jim. Very good point.
Yeah, and that's just one of many other, you know, systems and things that are out there. And again, I guess an example of, you know, having the right team member or having the right professional that understands this stuff and can, you know, integrate this into your design just gives you a better final solution. So, like always, Han, we burned up our 60 minutes. So we enjoy this stuff so much that, you know, we could go on for quite a while. We don't want to take up too much of your time, because I know your time is very valuable. We're so thankful for all the people that have listened. Hopefully, it's been informative and that you can get something out of it. Please, if you have any questions, you can get a hold of Han and I. You can get a hold of Bill. You know, get us on our website, get us on our email, get us on our phone number. We'll do what we can to help. And I know during this, especially during the business shutdown time, you know, we've gotten a ton of people, questions, comments, have called for advice, and you know, we're happy to give that out. And again, for those that haven't, go to 1000 Gems, Dr. Tom Orrin's site. We did almost a 60-minute video with him about this whole thing that has been extremely well received. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Because I think there's a lot of very valuable information there. And so, again, thankful for you listening, spending time with us. And Han, I'll let you have the last words.
Well, if you can't find, if you don't have the time to search Dr. Orrin's website and so on, a lot of that same information is shared on our website to our radio program, as well as our blog. That's our website address is www.hjtdesign.com. Like Jim said, we blew through an hour. Certainly appreciate your time. I had fun. I hope Jim wasn't too rough on you. Meanwhile, stay safe, and until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.